In 2 Samuel, we'll start in chapter 13. Tonight I want us to look at the story of Absalom for a while. And tonight I'm going to do a lot of reading, mostly because I want us to spend some time with the story. I don't just want to gloss over it and hit the highlights. I want us to spend some time and truly delve into the story. Partly because I used tonight's sermon this morning, but mostly because I want to spend time in the story and look at it in depth. So looking at the story of Absalom actually starts with the story of Amnon and Tamar. So starting there in 2 Samuel chapter 13, in verse 1. It says, "After this, Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her." And it goes on to talk about how Amnon had a friend, and this friend helped him devise a plan where he pretended to be sick, and then he got David to have Tamar come and tend to him while he was sick. And I'm going to pick up, and she cooked him food, and she brought him food, and I'm picking up in verse 11. And it says, "Now, when she had brought them to eat, him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, 'Come lie with me, my sister.' But she answered him, 'No, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing should be done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing. And I, where could I take my shame? And as for you, you would be like one of the fools in Israel. Now, therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you.' However, he would not heed her voice, and being stronger than she, he forced her and lay with her." And skipping on down to Tamar's response to the end to this at verse 19, "Then Tamar put ashes on her head and tore her robe on many colors that was on her and laid her hand on her head and went away crying bitterly. And Absalom, her brother, said to her, 'Has Amnon, your brother, been with you? But now hold your peace, my sister, for he is your brother. Do not take this thing to heart.' So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. But when King David heard of all these things, he was very angry. And Absalom spoke to his brother Amnon neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar." So the story of Absalom starts here with Absalom hating Amnon. For Amnon had done a despicable thing. But Absalom's hatred for Amnon is where we start when we begin in verse 23. "And it came to pass, after 2 full years, that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazar, which is near Ephraim. So Absalom invited all the king's sons. Then Absalom came to the king and said, 'Kindly note, your servant has sheep shearers. Please let your king and his servants go with your servant.' But the king said to Absalom, 'No, my son, let us not all go now, lest we be a burden to you.' Then he urged him, but he would not go, and he blessed him. Then Absalom said, 'If not, please let my brother Amnon go with us.' And the king said to him, 'Why should he go with you?' But Absalom urged him, so he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, 'Watch now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not be afraid. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant.' So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and each one got on his mule and fled." So here we have Absalom having conspiring and planning and murdering his brother Amnon. And David hears this, and at first he hears that all of his sons were killed. But then someone says, no, no, it was just Amnon. And so I'm picking up again down in verse 34. "Then Absalom fled, and the young man who was keeping watch lifted his eyes up and looked, and there many people were coming from the road on the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said to the king, 'Look, the king's sons are coming. As your servant said, so it is.' So it was, as soon as he had finished speaking, that the king's sons indeed came, and they lifted up their voice and wept. Also the king and all of his servants wept bitterly. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Amihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. And King David longed to go to Absalom, for he had been comforted concerning Amnon, because he was dead. So Absalom then flees and is in hiding for 3 years. But we still see David still has this longing for Absalom. He still, even though Absalom has murdered David's son, because Absalom is his son as well, David still has this longing. And continuing on in chapter 14, it says, so Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was concerned about Absalom. And Joab sent to Tekoa and brought from there a wise woman and said to her, please pretend to be a mourner and put on mourning apparel. Do not anoint yourself with oil, but act like a woman who has been mourning a long time for the dead. Go to the king and speak to him in this manner. So Joab put the words in her mouth. And Joab gives her a story to tell. And she tells the story as if she's mourning for one of her sons has killed another one of her sons. And she's a widower. And her only son, her one remaining son, is the only means to carry on her husband's name. But her family is demanding the other son for blood. But she doesn't want to give him up. And she goes through with David discussing, and David promises his protection to this son. And then she asks him, why have you not done the same with Absalom? If you will protect my one son who killed my other son, and you will say he should be protected, why is Absalom still in exile? And picking up then in verse 19, after she had asked him that question, said, verse 18, then the king answered and said to the woman, please do not hide from me anything that I ask you. And the woman said, please, let my lord the king speak. So the king said, is the hand of Joab with you in all this? And the woman answered and said, as you live, my lord the king, no one can turn to the right hand or to the left from anything that my lord the king has spoken. For your servant Joab commanded me, and he put all these words in the mouth of your maidservant. To bring about this change of affairs, your servant Joab has done this thing. But my lord is wise, according to the wisdom of the angel of God, to know everything that is in the earth. And the king said to Joab, all right, I have granted this thing. Go, therefore, bring back the young man Absalom. Then Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, today your servant knows that I have found favor in your sight, my lord, O king, and that the king has fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house, but did not see the king's face. So Absalom is brought back out of exile, but he's still not reconciled to David. He's still not allowed to see the king's face. So continuing on in verse 25. Now in all Israel, there was no one who was praised as much as Absalom for his good looks. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And when he cut the hair of his head, at the end of every year, he cut it because it was heavy on him. When he cut it, he weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels, according to the king's standard. To Absalom were born 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of beautiful appearance. And Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem, but did not see the king's face. Therefore Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but he would not come to him. And when he sent again the second time, he would not come. So he said to his servants, see, Joab's field is near mine, and he has barley there. Go and set it on fire. And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom's house and said to him, why have your servants set my field on fire? And Absalom answered Joab, look, I sent to you saying, come here so that I may send you to the king to say, why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me to be there still. Now therefore, let me see the king's face, But if there is iniquity in me, let him execute me." So Joab went to the king and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king. Then the king kissed Absalom. So here we have for another 2 years, Absalom is in Jerusalem, still estranged from his father, David. And he calls for Joab, who was the one who was instrumental in bringing him back from exile. And Joab doesn't come, and Joab won't come, so he has his servants go burn Joab's field. So finally Joab comes, so he gets his attention, and says, "Go plead to the king for me, because why am I still not there?" So Joab goes and pleads to the king, and what do we see? The king calls for him and forgives him, and the king kissed Absalom. I would like to say, and they all lived happily ever after there, because here we have Absalom reconciled to the king, but that's not where the story ends. Continuing on in chapter 15. After this, it happened that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Now Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. So it was, whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision, that Absalom would call to him and say, "What city are you from?" And he would say, "Your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel." Then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your case is good and right, but there is no deputy of the king to hear you." Moreover, Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give him justice." And it was so, whenever anyone came near to bow down to him, that he would put on his hand and take him and kiss him. In this manner, Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. So Absalom doesn't leave it alone. He begins through deceit and trickery, stealing the hearts of the kingdom away from his father. And continuing on verse 7, "Now it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said to the king, 'Please let me go to Hebron and pay the vow which I made to the Lord. For your servant took a vow while I dwelt at Geshur in Syria, saying, If the Lord indeed brings me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. For your servant took a vow while I dwelt at Geshur in Syria, saying, If the Lord indeed brings me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord.' And the king said to him, 'Go in peace.' So he arose and went to Hebron. Then Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, 'As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom reigns in Hebron.' And with Absalom went 200 men invited from Jerusalem, and they went along innocently and did not know anything. Then Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor from the city, from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy grew strong, for the people with Absalom continually increased in number." So then Absalom, after conspiring and using trickery to steal the hearts of the kingdom, he lies to David and says, "Let me go worship God at Hebron." And David says, "Go." And he goes to set up his own throne, to set up his own seat of power, and begins a rebellion in Israel. On in verse 13, "Now a messenger came to David, saying, 'The hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom.' So David said to all of his servants who are with him at Jerusalem, 'Arise and let us flee, or we shall not escape from Absalom. Make haste to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring disaster upon us, and strike the city with the edge of the sword.' And the king's servant said to the king, 'We are your servant, ready to do whatever my lord the king commands.' Then the king went out with all his household after him. But the king left 10 women, concubines, to keep the house. And the king went out with all the people after him and stopped at the outskirts." The rebellion of David's own son Absalom has grown to the point that David is being driven out of Jerusalem. He's had to flee his own city, his own kingdom, because Absalom has began this rebellion to overthrow him. And the story continues on through there, talking about David and what occurs on some of the things that occur while he flees. And we won't take the time to read all of that. But I do want to skip over to chapter 16. And we see that David sends a man by the name of Hushai back to Absalom to pretend to be a servant of Absalom. And picking up in verse 15 of chapter 16, it says, "Meanwhile, Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel was with him. And so it was, when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, came to Absalom, that Hushai said to Absalom, 'Long live the king, long live the king.' So Absalom said to Hushai, 'Is this your loyalty to your friend? Why did you not go with your friend?' And Hushai said to Absalom, 'No, but whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel choose, his I will be, and with him I will remain. Furthermore, whom should I serve? Should I not serve in the presence of his son, as I have served in your father's presence? So will I be in your presence.' Then Absalom said to Ahithophel, 'Give advice as to what we should do.' And Ahithophel said to Absalom, 'Go into your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house, and all Israel will hear that you are abhorred by your father. Then the hands of all who are with you will be strong.' So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the top of the house, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel." So now Absalom, at the advice of Ahithophel, who was David's counselor, who he's stolen away from David, not only has taken over in Jerusalem, but he's taken over David's concubines, those 10 women he left behind to maintain the house. He's pitched a tent on top of the house for all Israel to see. And he's taken over David's concubines. And it continues on, and Ahithophel and Hushai both give advice to Absalom. One says, "Let's chase David down right now." And the other, in essence, advises, "Let's build up an army and go after David." And Hushai is trying to delay Absalom to give David time to flee. And he sends word, and they decide to take the advice of Hushai. And he sends word to David, and David flees across the Jordan. And he flees, and he builds up an army. And Absalom builds up an army. And in chapter 18, we come to the battle of these two armies, of Absalom's army to usurp David, and David's, those who remain loyal to David. And I want you to stop and think about David at this point. Don't just think about the events that have occurred. Think about what David feels at this point, what he's seen. He's watched his own son murder his other son, his own brother. He's watched that son, once being forgiven, over the course of 40 years, plot a rebellion and build a rebellion and overthrow David and cast him out of Jerusalem. The son has gone into David's concubines and taken charge of them, and he has built up an army to come and to kill David and to kill all of his followers. And that is where we stand when we begin the battle in chapter 18. It says, "And David numbered the people who were with him, and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. Then David sent out one-third of the people under the hand of Joab, one-third under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one-third under the hand of Ittai, the Gittite. And the king said to the people, 'I also will surely go out with you myself.' But the people answered, 'You shall not go out, for if we flee away, they will not care about us, nor if half of us die will they care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us now, for you are now more help to us in the city.' Then the king said to them, 'Whatever seems best to you, I will do.' So the king stood beside the gate, and all the people went out by hundreds and by thousands. Now the king had commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, saying, 'Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom.' And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains orders concerning Absalom. So the people went out into the field of battle against Israel. And the battle was in the woods of Ephraim. The people of Israel were overthrown there before the servants of David, and a great slaughter of 20,000 took place that day. For the battle there was scattered over the face of the whole countryside, and the woods devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. Then Absalom met the servants of David. Absalom rode on a mule. The mule went under the thick boughs of a great terebinth tree, and his head caught in the terebinth tree, so he was left hanging between heaven and earth. And the mule, which was under him, went on. Now a certain man saw it, and told Joab, and said, "I just saw Absalom hanging in a terebinth tree." So Joab said to the man who told him, "You just saw him? And why did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have given you 10 shekels of silver and a belt." But the man said to Joab, "Though I were to receive 1,000 shekels of silver in my hand, I would not raise my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, saying, 'Beware lest anyone touch the young man Absalom. Otherwise, I would have dealt falsely against my own life.' For there is nothing hidden from the king, and you would have set yourself against me." Then Joab said, "I cannot linger with you." And he took 3 spears in his hand and thrust them through Absalom's heart while he was still alive in the midst of the terebinth tree. And 10 young men who bore Joab's armor surrounded Absalom and struck and killed him. So Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing Israel. For Joab held back the people, and they took Absalom and cast him into a large pit in the woods and laid a very large heap of stones over him. Then all Israel fled, every one to his tent. So here David's servants emerge victorious on this field of battle and slay Absalom, the leader of the rebellion. And they begin to send word back to the city where David is staying. And there's a young man by the name of Ahimaaz, and he wants to run back and send word to David. And they say, no, and they send a Cushite instead. But that man keeps saying, "Please let me go, let me run to David." So finally, they let him go as well. So, and he passes up the Cushite running. So when we pick up back up here in verse 24, we have 2 messengers coming to David. The Cushite now behind, and Ahimaaz in the front. Verse 24. Now David was sitting between the 2 gates, and the watchman went up to the roof over the gate to the wall, lifted his eyes and looked, and there was a man running alone. Then the watchman cried out and told the king, and the king said, "If he is alone, there is news in his mouth." And he came rapidly and drew near. Then the watchman saw another man running, and the watchman called to the gatekeeper and said, "There is another man running alone." And the king said, "He also brings news." So the watchman said, "I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And the king said, "He is a good man and comes with good news." So Ahimaaz called out and said to the king, "All is well." Then he bowed down with his face to the earth before the king and said, "Blessed be the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king." The king said, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" So this great battle that's been fought over David's kingdom, after everything Absalom's done, not only when they went off to battle did he say, "Spare the young man Absalom," did the men who heard him fear for their very lives that not even 1,000 shekels of silver would bring them to touch him? But David wasn't just saying that to hoping it could be true. For even when the messenger comes back from the battle and says, "We have won," David's question is, "How is Absalom?" And so the king said, back in verse 29 again, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" Ahimaaz answered, "When Joab sent the king's servant and me, your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I did not know what it was about." Then the king said, "Turn aside and stand here." So he turned aside and stood still. Just then the Cushite came And the Cushite said, "There is good news, my lord the king, for the Lord has avenged you this day of all those who rose up against you." And the king said to the Cushite, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" Yet again, somebody else comes up, and his only concern is the young man Absalom safe. And continue on, it says, "So the Cushite answered, 'May the enemies of my lord the king and all who raise against you to do harm be like that young man.'" And so what is, David finally hears the news that he's been wondering about, and he hears that Absalom is dead. And a great battle has been won. 20,000 men have been overcome. And what is David's response to the news that Absalom is dead? In verse 33, it says, "Then the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said thus, 'O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. O Absalom, my son.' And Joab was told, 'Behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom.' So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard it said that day, 'The king is grieved for his son.' And the people stole back into the city that day, as people who are ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried out with a loud voice, 'O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son.'" I am not a father, and someday maybe I will read this, and I might have a similar response to what some fathers out there might be. Well, of course that's David's response. Absalom was his son. But until that point, and for about the half of you out there who will never be fathers, we have this story to show us the great love that the father has for his son. Here is David, whose son has done everything to make him worthy, or to make him worthy of scorn, and to make David glad that he is free of this burden. Yet he's a father, and he loves his son. And he's mourning, and the whole city mourns because David is deeply distressed. And there's turn over to 1 Samuel, because we find out something about David there. And in 1 Samuel chapter 13, and verse 13, we have Samuel talking to Saul. And he says, "And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord has commanded you.'" When Saul failed to live up to his expectations, God sought a man after his own heart. And who was that man? That man was David. We read in Acts 13, in verse 22, where he says, "And when he had removed him," speaking of removing Saul, "he raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, 'I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will.'" David, the man who loved his son, regardless of everything that had been done and anything that he could have done, is the man of the same heart that is of God's. So when we read in Galatians chapter 4, starting in verse 4, where it says, "But when the fullness of the time had come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. And because you are sons, God has sent forth the spirit of his son into your hearts, crying out, 'Abba, Father.' Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir of God through Christ." When we read that we are God's children. He is our Father. That is the same love that David had for Absalom that God has for us. No matter what we do, no matter how terrible a thing we've done, God has that love for us. And in a way, we can kind of be like Absalom. For it was our sins that caused him to sin Christ. It was our sins that nailed him to the cross. And Christ was also his son. And so in a way, we caused another one of his sons to be killed. Yet, as we saw the love of David, God's love endures over that. And we can have access to that love. If there's anyone here tonight who has need of that love, whether they need to put Christ on in baptism or have fallen away and seek his love again, come while we stand and sing.